Argument is Robertson Marine versus I-4 Solutions. Counsel, the podium has a clock that shows your total time remaining, including any rebuttal time. If I remember right, there are cross appeals, so your rebuttal is going to be limited to just the cross appeal portion. You want to reserve a portion of your time. If you do, I'll try and help you keep track of it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
If you could just indicate how much, and then I'll ask the appellee as well.
I'd like 4 minutes for rebuttal.
I'll try and help you do that. And counsel, you want to reserve a portion of your time for rebuttal?
I would like 4 minutes as well.
Okay. The podium clock has a total of 15. That includes your 4 minutes of rebuttal within those 15. So I'll try and give you a high sign to let you know when you're approaching your 4 minute mark. And appellant, if you're ready to begin, you can.
Thank you, Your Honor.
It's a great privilege for me as a young attorney to be able to make my professional debut before the Court of Appeals today. I don't doubt that each of you is familiar.
This is Mr. Reinhardt, is that correct?
I am Stephen Reinhardt, and I am counsel for the defendant and appellant I-4 Solutions in this matter. I am sure that each of you is familiar with the record and the facts that gave rise to this case. But nevertheless, I'd like to review them, if I may, just for 1 to 2 minutes, not because I want the findings of fact overturned or changed, but because I think it's necessary to have them in mind in analyzing a question of law today, which is who was the prevailing party in this case. This case began when the plaintiff and appellee, Robertson Marine, approached I-4 Solutions wanting a website for their boat retail business in Salt Lake City. I-4 Solutions and Robertson Marine came to an agreement that I-4 Solutions would design this website for $6,550. Half of that amount was paid up front, and the remaining half was to be paid upon completion of the website. After the website was finished, at least in I-4's opinion, they requested the rest of the money. Robertson Marine refused to pay it, and Robertson Marine initiated litigation, commenced this litigation in the Third District Court for the District of Salt Lake here in Salt Lake County. They could have brought the action in small claims court because their damage claim was only $3,275 originally. However, they chose to bring it in civil court, and I-4 filed compulsory counterclaims also for the remaining balance on the contract of $3,275. In a bench trial held, I believe, on September 8th of 2008 before the Honorable Judge Faust, Robertson Marine, the plaintiff and appellee, lost all of their claims, recovered nothing on their claims, and judgment was awarded to I-4 Solutions, the defendant, on their counterclaim for unjust enrichment in the amount of $1,800, which was, I believe, 56% of the amount of damages they claimed in their unjust enrichment, in their damage claim.
And that's sort of the problem you've got today, isn't it? Basically, can you have it both ways? Can you have an unjust enrichment award as well as a award under the contract?
I believe that the trial judge was, the record shows that he ordered mediation. The record shows that he encouraged the parties to settle. And I believe that the trial judge was uncomfortable awarding the $1,800 under the breach of contract claim because he knew doing so would implicate or invoke the fee-shifting provision in the contract. There was an attorney's fee provision and did not want to award $10,000 to $20,000 in attorney's fees on a claim that was only $3,000, especially where he was frustrated that the parties had not settled and brought such a small matter before the court. Nevertheless, I represent I-4 Solutions, who was the defendant, who had filed compulsory counterclaims and negotiated originally with Robertson Marine for this written contract that included a fee-shifting provision.
So your theory is that you're entitled to fees because you successfully defended the claim sounding in contract.
That's right. That's right. And so had the counterclaims not even been filed and I-4 Solutions prevailed, as they did entirely, on the plaintiff Robertson Marine's claims, I-4 Solutions would be entitled to attorney's fees under that contract. By filing counterclaims, in which they partially prevailed, I don't think that that should negate their right to the attorney's fees arising in contract. And so,
but this is not the typical attorney fee provision in contract, is it?
Well,
isn't it limited to collection efforts as opposed to a breach of contract, right?
It reads, if I may, I agree to pay all collection costs and reasonable attorney's fees if collection is required.
So it's not for breach of contract, it's for collection.
And attorney's fees. For all collection costs and attorney's fees. I believe that collection was required because Robertson Marine forced I-4 to file compulsory counterclaims. And costs and reasonable attorney's fees would include the attorney's fees in trial and in this appeal.
Well, for that proposition, you're relying on the reciprocal statute.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor. There are several issues that I think the court needs to consider in deciding whether attorney's fees ought to be awarded in this case and whether the non-award of attorney's fees by the Honorable Judge Faust was proper, including who was the prevailing party. And I know that opposing counsel will get into this issue today. In Utah, pursuant to case law from this court and the Supreme Court, the flexible and reasonable approach is used in determining who was...
Does the prevailing party idea, though, matter when it's limited just to the contract claim? Both sides brought contract claims. One, affirmatively, the other is a compulsory counterclaim.
Right.
But both sides lost those claims in the trial court.
Well,
so wasn't the trial judge within his discretion to say, each of you lost your contract claims, attorney's fees are only available for contract claims, I'm not going to award any?
We've made several arguments in the appeal. One is that this court should rule that the trial judge did impliedly find the defendants and appellants prevailed on their breach of contract claim because the three elements of breach of contract in Utah are, one, that there's a contract, two, that that there was performance by the party seeking recovery, and three, that there were there was a breach by the other party and there were damages. Each of those four elements were found in the findings of fact by Judge Faust.
Where was the breach?
It was in Robertson Marine not paying the second half of the contract price.
But the contract wasn't completed, was it?
It was. Judge Faust...
I thought the website was not delivered as a finished product. There was still a calculator and other things that were not done.
Well, Judge Faust used this language in the findings of fact. Defendant performed these services, meaning the website services, by completing the majority of work on plaintiff's website and is entitled to be paid $1,800. The judge ruled essentially that defendant substantially complied with the contract. Now, I think it's important in this case to recognize the judge could have granted in this matter up to $3,275 to plaintiffs or up to $3,275 to defendants. He granted $1,800 to defendants, which was 76% of the spectrum that the between the floor and the ceiling to the defendants. I think it's clear that the defendants were the prevailing party on Robertson's original claims as well as their counterclaims, although be it in equity on the unjust enrichment claim.
On the facts, wasn't there also an issue about delay on the part of performance? What did the trial court say about that?
The trial court judge reduced the award from $3,275 to $1,800 because the trial court found, as a matter of fact, that a calculator worth $600 had not been finished and that the site was delayed longer, its completion was delayed. Nevertheless, I think that the language of the findings of fact shows that the trial court found that I-4 Solutions substantially complied with the contract. Now, I'd like to save some of my arguments on the unjust enrichment for rebuttal, because that's the issue of the cross appeal in this case. But the case of AK Whipple Plumbing, Heating, and Air says, in that case, it's a mechanics lien case, and the court has said, the Supreme Court in that case, that the rules for determining who is the prevailing party in mechanics lien cases and contract cases are essentially the same, whether the attorney's fees are awarded is by contract or by statute. And in that case, a plumber sued a property owner for $30,000 on mechanics lien. Ultimately, the plumber recovered $572, which was 2% of their claim. And the trial court refused to award attorney's fees to anyone. Under the flexible and reasonable approach, which is the approach that this state uses to determine who is the prevailing party, the trial court determined that a 2% recovery wasn't enough to consider the case anything but a draw. Now, the court was encouraged in that case to adopt the net judgment rule, which is the rule in many states, in which case the prevailing party is the person who recovered the most. Under the net judgment rule in Whipple Plumbing, Heating, and Air, the plaintiff would have been the prevailing party because it recovered only 2% of its claim damages. Under the flexible and reasonable approach, that may not be enough.
You got your 4 minutes.
Okay, and I'd just like to say here, my client recovered 76% of the available damages. I think that is enough to consider them the prevailing party. Were the courts to conclude that this situation were a draw of some kind, it would discourage plaintiffs in the future from even bringing counterclaims. When doing so, negates their right to recover attorney's fees. And also, the court has said that even in the flexible and reasonable approach adopted here in the state of Utah, the first consideration is the net judgment rule. Who recovered the net judgment, which clearly was I-4 in this case. Defeated the plaintiff's claims. They won some of their own counterclaims. They were the prevailing party, and under the contract between the parties with an attorney fee provision, I think they're entitled to attorney's fees. This is an important case despite the small amount of the damages, because there's so many disputes, I've realized, as an attorney in the state of Utah that involve small contract amounts of money. And oftentimes, cases like this are filed in civil court rather than small claims because of the extortionary effect the plaintiff believes the cost of defending the case will have on the defendant. And I believe that that's what happened here. They didn't believe the defendants would go to the work to defend the case as they have. Ultimately, the defendants proved the claims meritless and should be entitled to the attorney's fees they negotiated for with the plaintiff before this dispute was commenced. All right, if there are no further questions, I'll save the rest of my comments for rebuttal.
And you'll have 2.5 minutes on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, Richard Golden on behalf of Robertson's Marine. I have Mr. Robertson here with us today. The problem with I-4's position here is self-evident, is that they conflate the issue of who prevailed in the case with prevailing on the contract. Both sides repeatedly asked the trial court judge, Judge Faust, to award attorney's fees based on the contractual provision. Prior to the findings of fact even being prepared, I-4 asked for attorney's fees, again claiming that they had prevailed on the contract. That was done after the judge issued his minute entry that said that they prevailed on a theory of unjust enrichment. I-4 asked for attorney's fees under the contract. The trial court refused to do that. The trial court judge clearly had the issue of attorney's fees and the contract before it. Now, I have to pull back on something that we presented in our briefs to this court. We raised the issue about whether the trial court could properly have found for unjust enrichment when there was a contract explicitly addressing the issue. And in grappling with that, I had a lot of trouble with that because I was trying to figure out what Judge Faust did under the circumstances. Clearly, he did not award contract damages because, as counsel points out, if he had done that, there would have been the full amount of contract damages, and we were thousands of dollars less than that. In doing my research last night, and I have to apologize to the court, it's one of those things that you come across when you're trying to make sure one of your cases didn't get overturned, I came across the case of Bailey Allen versus Kurtzit. And Bailey Allen, and that's located at 876 Pacific 2nd 421. It's a case out of this court in 1994. And in that case, Bailey Allen was a construction company, and it entered into a contract with Mr. Kurtz to build a house for him, and it was a cost-plus contract. He was to receive $1,000 over whatever the cost of the contract turned out to be. One of the requirements was that Bailey Allen was going to carry workers' compensation insurance, and they were going to cover those issues as well as ramrod the deal, as the construction. And what happened is that after about 4 months, Mr. Kurtz discovered that they did not have insurance, and Bailey Allen also wasn't doing the job up to snuff, and so he terminated the contract. Bailey Allen sued, as here it sued based on contract and on unjust enrichment. And what this court found was that because they had not substantially performed, Bailey Allen had not substantially performed, they couldn't sue on the contract, but they could sue for unjust enrichment. And that was what the trial court found. That's what this court upheld. And in doing so, it cited some language that I think is important here. In an action upon the contract, the contractor cannot recover until and unless he shows that he or she has substantially at least complied with its, meaning the contract's, provisions. That's at page 425 Pacific 2nd. If defective performance, though less than substantial, has conferred benefits on the defendant in excess of his or her injury, he may be under a quasi-contractual, that is unjust enrichment, duty to pay that excess. Thus, a contractor whose breach is such that he or she has rendered less than substantial performance has no right to the contract price. He or she is said to have no remedy in contract. The contractor's right is to reasonable compensation for value received. And that, I think, is what Judge Faust was trying to do here. And although it was inartfully drafted in the findings of fact, I think that's where the judge was going. Now, what confused me about
it? It sounds like you're coming close to abandoning your cross appeal here. Is that accurate?
I'm abandoning the part, I think, where it says there can be no unjust enrichment because there was a contract on the issue. I think what the judge found was that because of the lack of the calculator and because of the substantial delay, remind you that Robertson's lost an entire boating season because of the delay. This was a substantial part of the contract. And this court has said that where there's not, and there wasn't a time element was put into it, the court is empowered to imply a reasonable time. And in this case, it was 8 months. Robertson's is in the boating business. It lost an entire boating season. It was substantially denied the benefits of the contract. So I think what Judge Faust did was say, Robertson's didn't breach because they had done everything they were supposed to do. I-4 simply didn't perform on time, and the performance that they did give was deficient because it was so late, it didn't have the calculator, and Robertson's didn't have the password to operate it. And so I think that's what he essentially did. Was to say they breached. And in findings, in its findings, actually they couched it as a conclusion of law that was prepared by I-4. What the judge said was that there was substantial compliance. And of course the problem, of course, is that the findings are so sparse. But at finding of fact number 11, it says that the, and I'm looking for it now and I can't find it, but it says that I-4 substantially performed by providing under the contract except for, and that's the part that's troubling, it's not very artfully drafted, except for the failure to provide the calculator and the substantial delay. Against that finding, we also have to consider that this wasn't a construction contract where Robertson's performance was triggered by substantial performance. It was triggered by completion. That's full completion and approval. It is akin, if you will, to a satisfaction guarantee that is based that you will be satisfied with the product.
You make three claims on your cross appeal. You're giving up on the first
one. I'm giving up on that one, but I'm only partially giving up on it, and I'd be happy to explain.
But your attorney fee claim still is in place, and you're also your direct challenge to that unjust enrichment finding.
It is, but it's only partially there. I'm giving up the part that says he couldn't have awarded unjust enrichment, because I think that's what he did here, was to find that there wasn't performance under the contract, therefore they couldn't sue under the contract. Robertson's didn't breach. Robertson's essentially said, rescind the contract, give me my money back. And then the judge found that there was unjust enrichment, and he applied the $3,500 that Robertson's had already paid towards the unjust enrichment that he felt was due to I-4. The problem is that he went from there and proceeded to say, in the Bailey Allen case is directly on point here, because that's exactly what the judge did in that case and what this court upheld. But what the court didn't do there is it didn't say to the construction company, Bailey Allen, go ahead and do some more work under the contract, go ahead and finish up, and then apply unjust enrichment damages to that component as well. That's where the trial court below's decision really kind of threw me, because that's where Judge Faust went, was he went a step further and gave I-4 additional damages that I suspect he probably ought not have done. I think he was fine in saying that I-4 is entitled to some unjust enrichment damages, because under Bailey Allen versus Kurtz, that's what this court said he could do. So, now, to our portion of the case, which is attorney's fees, the law seems to me to be pretty clear that where someone pursues a remedy under contract, the contract provides for attorney's fees, and you lose, then you have to pay the attorney's fees. That's what their argument is. And I think insofar as that's a statement of the law, that's correct. That, however, applies on appeal as well, because what we're here on, the only thing we're here on, is the attorney's fees provision under the contract. That's the only thing we're here on. Essentially, what Judge Faust did was throw out both parties' contract claims, and they were left with unjust enrichment. Robertson's Marine was left with unjust enrichment, and there are not attorney's fees awarded in unjust enrichment. It's that simple. What we're here on now is we're here on the contract. They want attorney's fees based on the contractual provision, and they didn't prevail in contract.
But the contractual provision is limited to collection.
That is a problem for us, I have to admit. But you end up with
attorney's fee provision, your argument would be stronger then.
My argument would be much better if it talked about the prevailing party, which is the language that I-4 wants to focus on. That provision of the contract provides for attorney's fees for collection. That's collection on the contract. I guess the problem that this court is faced with as a policy matter is once they bring that up to the next level and say, we've won under the contract, we need our attorney's fees, if they didn't prevail on the contract, and it's clear that they did not, and they bring it before this court, who's going to pay Robertson's attorney's fees? Who should pay Robertson's attorney's fees? The answer is, to me, is under the reciprocal provision, it should be I-4.
Okay, here's your 4-minute mark.
Let me look at my notes real quick and see if I want to eat into that, but I don't think so.
Okay, your rebuttal time will be limited to your cross appeal. So.
I think maybe just one other thing I'd like to point out, and that is with respect to the issue of substantial performance. Because this contract didn't envision substantial performance or partial performance in any way, shape, or form. It was essentially, this will be done and you will approve it. So substantial performance is really kind of an odd concept to apply. But the Utah Supreme Court, in the context of liquidated damages, in the case of Reliance Insurance versus the Utah Department of Transportation, and that's at 858 Pacific 2nd, 1363, said that substantial performance exists, quote, where there has been no willful departure from the terms of the contract and no omission in essential points, and the contract has been honestly and faithfully performed in its material and substantial particulars. In this case, getting that website done so the Robertson's Marine would have it available, I think the court can take judicial notice that people aren't buying many boats in November. The completion of that contract during the boating season was a substantial portion of what it bargained for. And so there wasn't substantial performance here, and that's where the court was going below. Thank you.
Okay, you have 2.25 on rebuttal then.
Right.
Mr. Reinhart, you have 2.5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, I feel that the appellee is making factual representations to the court which were not found by the trial court, including that there was a substantial delay in the completion of the website and that this caused huge damages to the appellee. The trial court analyzed this question and did not rule in the findings of fact that there was a substantial delay. They ruled that there was a delay and that the damages that that caused to the defendant were about $1,300. All these questions of how late in the season it was and how much in sales were lost by Robertson Marine were analyzed by the trial court already. So for the appellee to get up here and say that somehow they prevailed on their contract claim, and I think even he suggested that they prevailed on their unjust enrichment claim, is not true. No damages, no award judgment was given to the plaintiff in this case. Judgment was given only to the defendant for $1,800. In the record, in the findings of fact, the trial court uses the term substantially performed. They say that the defendant substantially performed with the contract. They find each of the factual elements that are necessary to conclude as a matter of law that I-4 prevailed on their breach of contract counterclaim. And I think that the court should recognize the legal effect of those findings of fact, which is that they support I-4 being the party on Robertson's claim for breach of contract and I-4's counterclaim for breach of contract. I do not have the case in front of me that was cited by the appellee, 876 P2D 421. I don't feel that the findings in that case changed my analysis of the prevailing party issue. Clear, I think that Robertson Marine is not entitled to attorney's fees on this appeal. At any rate, thank you for the time.
Thank you, counsel.
Mr. Golden, you have 2.25, limited to your cross appeal.
I'll try to lean it into that, Your Honor. If I stray, somebody let me know, please. The issue of substantial delay. Of course, part of the problem here is that the findings of fact are sparse. They should have and could have been fleshed out. They weren't. On the issue of substantial delay, I didn't say that the trial court said it was a substantial delay, but clearly that is something that this court can take judicial notice of in terms of the boating season and the marketing season that is available.
Sounds like you're almost asking us to remand it for findings.
You know, and that's exactly what happened in Bailey Allen versus Kurtz. If I may, and again, I've got to apologize for not bringing this up earlier. Had I known about it, it would have made the brief much better. It would have made our case much stronger. Clearly, I think this is dispositive here, to be honest with you. But that was what happened in Bailey Allen versus Kurtz, was that the trial court found that the findings of fact weren't sufficient. And they talk about the Davies test, which is a standard test for unjust enrichment. Benefit, appreciation of the benefit, and circumstances being it being unjust under the circumstances to allow the party to keep the benefit without paying the value thereof. But what the court said in Bailey Allen was the trial court's findings of fact and conclusions do not specifically address the three elements for recovery under unjust enrichment, nor do the undisputed underlying facts make clear the quasi-contract award is appropriate. Now, I think there was a quasi-contract award here that was probably appropriate. These guys did a lot of work. That became very clear at trial. And so they were entitled to something for that. But the problem comes in evening the unjust enrichment claims out. That's where the problem is. That ties into why I'm here today asking for attorney's fees, because that was what the trial court judge did there, and now we're here on an attorney's fees provision in the contract, which is why I think my client needs to be compensated for those. But in Bailey Allen versus Kurtz, what happened was this court remanded it back, and I'll finish. Unless there are further questions.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate the arguments from both sides.
We'll take
the matter under advisement, and we'll render a written decision for you just as quickly as we can. Thank you.